Zoom 007. That means, in technical terms, that we are on episode 2.
All right, episode 2. Let's do this.
Did we want to think of the theme song? Like, here, I'll set you up.
I don't think this is a good setup. Let's just outsource that. Come on.
You're right.
Let's just get more jobs. Hey, we're going to need it for this COVID thing.
Okay, cool. You know what I want to do first?
What?
It's been something that has just been eating at me in the best way possible, and it is to thank every single person that supported this podcast.
Oh my gosh. I was surprised at just the out-support of love. And
yeah, I'm just thank you so much to every single person who's really supported us. I know that meant a lot to you, and it was just, I mean, tears rolling down my face. Yeah. It was really, really special. So thank you to each and every one of you who did support us. So
yeah, thank you so much. Your thoughts and prayers, your well wishes definitely meant so much to us.
All right, this week's episode, I mean, kind of what we wanted to do is, now we have a little idea of what this podcast, or what our goal is of this podcast. Now we kind of want to tee it up a little bit, you know, give you guys, if you're not already, don't have an introduction into maybe what autism is like. We want to first kind of go over what the theoretical terminology or how it's looked upon by science, and then, you know, investigate whether, not whether or not it's true, because obviously it's true if it's theory, but perspective of what autism is, mm-hmm. and then investigate how you experience maybe those perspectives, right?
Oh, definitely.
So I think how I would approach this is, as I would first just look up what autism is. Mm-hmm. So I type that into Google. It says, you know, Autism Speaks, which is the number one autism awareness organization in the world. And you know, I'm just asking, so the search is, what is autism? And it says, autism or autism spectrum disorder, ASD, and, you know, we'll reference that a lot, refers to a broad range of conditions characterized by challenges with social skills, repetitive behaviors, speech and nonverbal communication. Oh, and speech, nonverbal communication. According to the Centers of Disease Control, autism affects an estimated 1 in 54 children in the U.S. today. Okay, so I want to break that down real quick. So it refers to a broad range of conditions characterized by challenges with social skills, repetitive behaviors, speech, and nonverbal communication. What's your initial reaction to something like that?
So it's a social disorder. I would say that would be the long and short of it, mostly just the social aspect of the autistic brain, I would have to say, is that our social part of what is in our head isn't well attuned as people who are normally who have a normal social aspect acumen, I would say.
So let me frame this up. So I'm going to do a whole lot of kind of scenario testing. So I'm really, the only way I can really learn is with visuals or kind of like for instances or stories, I guess.
Sure.
So, okay. So a story that anyone will often come across is like going out to a restaurant. So maybe that could be a place where the social skills is tested.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm at a restaurant and I'm about to order, maybe I'm with like a crowd that I'm not super familiar with, you mm-hmm. know, when they're going around at the table and you're waiting for them to like ask you for your order and you're kind of like nervous in your chest a little bit. I'm only speaking for myself. So I uh-huh. get a little nervous in my chest and I'm like, oh man, I can't mess this up. I really got to enunciate those kinds of things. Now that's kind of my experience, how I go about it. And then if I stutter, I'm like, oh man, I kind of beat myself up for it when I say my order. Mm-hmm. Now, how would you compare maybe an instance like that?
Well, it's kind of difficult for me because I also have high anxiety too, like with my autism. So I'm definitely a lot more uncomfortable with that. But if I know the person, I can sort of like, I can feel some sort of connection since we live in, like, if I was ordering in my hometown, definitely I feel a little more comfortable because most of the people around here, they know me. I know them in some aspect. But I get, let's say in your scenario, it is in a place that we don't know anyone. I would certainly feel uncomfortable. I would probably go to, like, the least crowded part of the restaurant, like, try and find a solo table and try and get away from, like, the traffic so that way I don't get overstimulated with all the noise, all the conversation.
Okay, just the best cope with maybe the social skill aspect. Okay, so that's interesting, because if it was someone that I didn't know, I had no relationship with, I knew that they had no idea who I was, it's interesting that I would actually be way more comfortable ordering, because I know that their judgment essentially carried no weight. So I would like, oh, I'm never going to see them again. I can just order however I want. If I stutter, then so be it. So you're saying that you're just kind of the opposite. So if you know them, if you're more like, you know, acclimated to the climate, maybe, which like you're saying, if you were to go to like a less crowded corner of the restaurant, that would help you kind of with that social skill.
Oh yeah. And I also have like little tools, like I'll either play like with my keys or I have a fidget on me, at least like that way, like keep my hands in my pocket, keep my hands occupied. So that way I feel if my hands are occupied, I'm not thinking about it as much. So it gets me into an atmosphere that I would feel comfortable in.
Okay. Interesting. I like that hack.
Thank you.
All right. It breaks down other parts of the definition of autism, which is, you know, social skills, repetitive behaviors, speech and nonverbal. Actually, instead of kind of dissecting that, I wanted to go into this next part. So I think, you know, when you're trying to understand what autism is, got it, got the definition. Now, what does that really look like in a day-to-day scenario, right? So I how I teed it up for this kind of this next part is I just simply searched the kind of the top 10 symptoms for high-functioning autism.
Okay.
So I want to run through these and get your interpretation of these. I want to be able to speak to the thing that is the spectrum.
Ah, okay.
So The list that I'm going to be going off is the top, you know, the top 10 symptoms of high functioning autism.
Okay. So
now, how would you differentiate between possibly what might be higher or lower on the spectrum?
Okay. So what we mean by higher functioning or low impact. So, so what we normally, how we differentiate that is, high verbal. That's what we mean by higher functioning. So their verbal skills are okay, but they're like, so that social aspect is all right, but they still are not up to par as, say, a person, I hate using the word, but normal person or average person.
Sure.
But also, then we have the low functioning or high impact. And we call them high impact because they are more affected by the autism spectrum disorder. And so they have lower verbal communication. So their social skills are a little lower than a person who is higher functioning. So for the rest of this podcast, I know I'm throwing a lot of terms at you right now. Mm-hmm. So we're just going with higher functioning and low functioning. So higher functioning means higher form of communication. Low functioning means a lower form of communication.
Okay, sure. And how this ties into maybe these top 10 symptoms is they could have a more extreme version of possibly how you perceive these symptoms or these, I don't know, these occurrences to happen, or they could have something completely different as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. So our goal of this exercise is to, you know, explain what possibly could be happening and then take someone like you, you know, I guess our exhibit A, and kind of frame it up, see what they think and just how they interpret that. So first one is emotional sensitivity. Any initial reactions to that, or do you need me to frame it up more?
Okay. Well, emotional insensitivity?
So emotional sensitivity, it says, you know, so a little context to it is, although often overlooked, sensitivity to emotions is a common issue for people on the high end of the spectrum.
So is that mean that we're more sensitive? Is that what it's saying?
Yeah, see, this is interesting.
Got it.
So maybe it's just more the taming of that emotion. So it's kind of saying in a day-to-day life, we might, and on the more popular slash normal side, we might have an easier time controlling the emotions that we do feel.
Okay.
So maybe you guys might both feel more extreme sense of it and then have a harder time controlling it.
I have to agree with that. There are times like
Give us a for instance.
If I get like if somebody criticizes like my work or saying you didn't do this right, I go after myself pretty hard, harder than you would have to say usual. So it's definitely that. And when we were younger, when we got in trouble, I took it like real hard. You remember seeing me cry, so
that's right.
Why? Because I didn't fully understand why I was in trouble.
Okay.
So you're thinking, oh, it wasn't that big a deal, but to me it was such a big deal because at one point I knew what I did was wrong, but I didn't know why I did what was wrong.
Okay, so when you say why you did what was wrong, so why it was wrong, or did you not really understand maybe why you would have did it, or my...
Yeah, why you can I did it.
Articulate, okay, why you did it.
Yeah, more why I did it.
Okay, so I'm just going to say the most popular example that it probably was. So, video games, right? So frame this up in video games. Well, you were playing video games past bedtime.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you got discipline, you know, dad caught you. He had the old trick. This is a trick to any of the parents out there that's dealing with this. So, you know, if they flick the TV off right when you're like coming up the stairs or they walk in the room, it is my dad, he just put his hand on the TV and you can measure the temperature of whether or not it's been on. And that is how Mitch was caught.
Oh, yeah. That was one of them.
So, you know, you got caught, maybe you disciplined, maybe you got grounded, something like that.
Yeah.
And then so you're saying that what emotions did you feel?
I was more angry at myself than at mom and dad, believe it or not. I was like, why did I do that? That was so stupid. And then just trying to figure that out. And it got super frustrating at that point.
Okay.
But yeah, you have to understand, like, I'm not asking parents to not discipline their kids. I'm asking, like, what my parents did later on, like, this was earlier on. But later on, my parents said, okay, Mitch, we're going to punish you. We're punishing you, and this is what you can learn from it. This is what they did later on. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah. So is that what kind of helped you understand, first of all, understand right from wrong, and then give you a better sense of self? So when you would make these mistakes, it kind of, them outlining the structure of, you know, if you do something wrong, you will get disciplined. So understanding maybe that system mm-hmm. is what gave you more comfortability with understanding your own emotions.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, okay, yeah, I did this something wrong. I got disciplined for it. I understand that's what discipline is for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So just walking through your steps, I almost think that'd be the best way to do that when disciplining your autistic child.
Sure.
Like, just walk them through. It's like, okay, what you did was wrong. You disobeyed me. So, this is going to be your punishment. But know that what I'm doing comes out of love. So, that was one thing. You see, our dad spanked us.
Like, some more than others.
Okay. Well, the thing was, it's just, I know some parents don't like the term spanking, but I think it helped us. Like, we understood what was right and wrong. And
that's worked, like, for us.
Yeah, like, know. Earlier on, he didn't do the explaining, so that's why I was naturally scared. But later on, he did explain.
As soon as he understood, you know, autism more, right?
Yeah, because I thought, oh, he's just hitting me because no reason. And then my dad explained.
Okay, I just need to say, if you don't know our dad, he's literally, like, the best human being in on the planet.
Oh, so, yeah, love, he's our a dad. Great guy. But
yeah, but your understanding of it might be a little jarring.
Yeah, well, I was the one who got spanked the most out of the three of us. Tori was like the perfect child, practically.
A little angel.
That's why she got a dog before.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
All right, emotional sensitivity. Fixation on particular subjects or ideas. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Okay,
yes.
What's your reaction?
Oh, I even deal that with kids I mentor right now, believe it or not. Like, I was into Star Wars. I was into Bionicles. Oh, gosh. I feel such like a 90s kid right now. Kids are like, what are Bionicles? And I was like, oh, gosh.
You're an old man.
Yeah, I am. But certain fixations, I try and... Except, like, what I tried to do now, like the fixations, like you can actually use that to help build yourself up.
Okay. Explain.
Yeah. So, we were just talking about him a little bit ago. We have a mutual friend. His name's Dave, and he loves talking about the weather, and he works for a big weather network, and he's just so invested into it right now, and he's high functioning too, and it's just amazing what he can do, and you can use that knowledge to help better yourself. And I used my knowledge. I love following football.
Yeah.
And my brother and my dad were both football players, so I couldn't really connect earlier on in that aspect. So I started to get into it, and there was like, oh, Mitch is catching up. So I think that almost built my relationship, like more of a better relationship with him.
Yeah, man, this is a really big one. I want to make sure that we touch on all aspects of it. So I want to first give them kind of the evolution of what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So it started out, my mom told me this not too long ago. I think it was dinosaurs.
Oh, yeah, dinosaurs.
So I think it was dinosaurs. You were fixated on that. So it's been in like 3 to 6 year blocks of fixations that you've had.
Uh-huh.
So it started off as like dinosaurs and kind of like history of the earth kind of thing, right?
Yep.
So it was, you know, it's kind of those animals connection to toys as well. So it started off as that, and then it evolved to... was it the second one, Bionicles?
U.S. Presidents.
Oh, it was U.S. Presidents. Okay, I was wondering if that was a full fixation or not.
Yeah, that was the presidents fascinated me for a bit, and then...
Yeah, that's when you got really interested to, like, obviously the order of the presidents, and then, particularly interesting facts about them,
yeah,
their lives, those kinds of things. And then after that was...
Then that was the Bionicles. Then the Star Wars.
Star Wars was a big one.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Okay, I bet that's super relatable for someone who could be listening to. So Star Wars was an absolutely massive one.
I mean, I like Star Wars. Like, I'm not into it as much as I... Like, the first... Oh, I'm going to get such grief for this. Like, the first episode, I saw at least 6 times when I was a kid. And, like, my parents, like, they showed up the first 3 times. And then it was like, Mitch, we're going to leave you at the movie theater. Now, this was a small town. Granted, this was a very small town when they allowed us to do this. But it was so funny.
Oh, they just let you stay in it?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't even know that.
They dropped me off at the movie theater. They just said, okay, we'll pick you, call us when, like, we hit the walkie-talkies.
Yeah,
so use it when we're done.
Oh, that's really funny. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Star Wars was a really big one. That was longer than any other fixation
I think
I remember. That was like 5 years.
Yeah,
something like that.
I remember asking my dad, I was like, how come I'm not making friends? And he said, well, you're not really talking about subjects that are relatable to people.
This was during the Star Wars phase, mind you.
Yeah, this was during the Star Wars phase. And this is what I'm trying to teach you. One of the kids I'm mentoring is like, you have to try and build towards other hobbies that other people like. And that way you can talk, build your social ammo. How about that?
Right. So I just thought of while you were talking about that, I just thought of like a Venn diagram. So that's when there's those two circles and then you have an overlap.
Oh, yeah.
So what was really cool for you, and I think that, you know, Dad and I had something to do with it just because our ecosystem was so engulfed with, you know, sports and football and stuff like that, is understanding the Venn diagrams around you, or maybe the independent circles. I don't know anything about Venn diagrams or the anatomy of them, so I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. But so understanding maybe where there's some potential to have some overlap with another person
can be
particularly productive or constructive of your life. So maybe the better positioning that you can do to... is there, I don't know if that's even possible to have like a controlled fixation or to maybe coax that person on the spectrum in your life towards a particular topic that could be beneficial to their lives.
That's what I'm trying to do, like in many ways. It's just...
With yourself or...
Well, it just, that's how I did it. Like Star Wars, I don't really care as much about it as I did then.
Mm-hmm.
And like Bionicle, they're pretty much all dead. And I mean, not all dead, just the franchise. The franchise is gone. I don't want to... Poor choice of words. Anyway, but I think it was just trying to, like, we live in a sports town, like our town of Powell, Wyoming.
Yeah, if you're looking to draw on any parallel, especially in like a small town, I don't know if that's right to say. It could be just anywhere. Like, sports is just such a big part of our culture in today's time that being able to talk about it at any capacity can only be, like you said, give you more ammo, more like social ammo.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that, I mean, you are able to build tribes so much easier, or get your foot in the door, you know, have a more solid handshake with the people around you. It's just by talking about, you know, who was drafted or who got injured, right?
Yeah, like, it was amazing. It's like saying, hey, Mitch, I didn't know you knew that. Or it's just amazing. It's just, you don't think people are interested until, like, you just start talking. They're just saying, hey, now you just form that social connection.
Right.
Yeah, it's, you can't really talk about, like, this was before the new movies car came out with the stars. It was hard to come across people who like that stuff. So
it's hard to get to that part of the conversation. It's different when, like, you know, when something that's actually really cool. So you have context clues. So mm-hmm. like someone will wear a jersey or have a logo on the back of their car about their or for their favorite sports teams. Or COVID aside, it's like, I mean, sports games are played all the time.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like a constant, just this endless cycle of conversation that you can possibly have with someone.
Oh, yeah. Or like other things, like one of my other things is like Lord of the Rings or other movies that people like to watch, and just find a shared topic that people like talking about.
Right.
Like, I think that's just one of the things, like, you can find that fixation. What I did was I had to focus on football for about a year before, like, I felt comfortable about talking about it.
Okay, now let's, I want to make sure that people understand the truth of the extent of which you know about this sport, though.
Okay.
And Mitch is a little over the top when it comes to how much he knows. I mean, I don't think you need to go exactly as far as Mitch where you're like, have to know how many kids they have and what schools they go
to.
Okay,
I don't know that. And, okay,
but,
it's just,
you know, super dramatic. But you were able to talk about it. You know, you said a year. Actually, you know what? Let's dive into that. So you said a year until you were comfortable enough to talk about it. What exactly does that mean?
I'd say about, like, I was in my junior year. Of high school. I was just wanted to expand. I wanted to see if I could get other people who could be my friend. Like, I only had, like, three friends. Not that saying that many friends is bad, mind you. But I wanted to see if I could. I think I socially bloomed. I was ready to feel comfortable because the fact is we moved a lot when I was a kid. And I had friends in other towns. And I don't know. I think that might have had a play in me not trying to be social, too. Like, because it's like saying, oh, like, we might move again next year or another year.
It was hard to kind of sink your teeth into the social climate around you.
Yeah, because it's just, it was just hard just trying to adapt to that. But then after, like, four years, first into it, it's like, okay, I guess we're staying here. Because it was normally, like, that three-year period. We would move 2 or 3 years,
yeah.
We would stay. And then the fourth year is like, okay, we're staying here. And then I wanted to get closer to you and Dad because me and Tori, we would always just take each other to them, go to the movies.
Okay, this is really important. I've always wanted to know this. I don't think we've even talked about this, but how did this fixation really start? I mean, I remember the situation super vividly. But how did you, okay, so I just wanted to make sure that we're, maybe for my own selfish benefit, so you're saying that how this kind of fixation on sports came about was,
okay,
blank, so Dad and I.
Yeah, you want to know the exact moment?
Yeah.
The 2007 Super Bowl with the Giants and the Patriots.
Like, okay.
You know, with the David Tyree catch?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that stayed in my mind, like, how much you and Dad and I think Dewey was there.
Okay.
Dewey Schwann.
Yeah.
It was just so much energy and how you guys were just talking and how amazing that game was. And
really?
I was like, that game stayed in my mind for a long time.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So you kind of wanted to be a part of it or maybe understand it in a different way?
Oh, yeah. At first, like, there was times, like, earlier on, I wouldn't say I was a fan of football at all.
Yeah.
Like, I was, like, thinking, oh.
You hated it.
I did.
You had no patience for it. Yeah. You didn't like it.
Yeah. But then after that Super Bowl, it was just, it's like saying, I don't know why I can't fall asleep. I was literally awake.
You're kidding.
Yeah, it kept me up. Like, it is funny because that day I was pretty tired that day, but it was just, I was like, okay, I got to figure out why I'm fascinated with this right now.
Okay.
And then I just wanted to know as much as I could about football. Like, and that was the first time I went on a football site, like NFL.com, and it just built like that.
No freaking way.
I know. I've never told you.
You haven't.
Yeah, but it just stayed in my mind. And then later that year, I went to Jim Stringer because over the years, people had said, Mitch, you should play football because I was a pretty big kid.
Yeah. Massive human being, by the way.
Yeah, but and then I just didn't have that passion. But then it flared up in me. It really, really? Did. And then it just, I almost like to want to say it just that you got a moment. I almost think maybe in every autistic or any person's moment, it's just like saying, I like this. I want to know more about it. And that's when I told Jim Stringer, who was a head football coach at that time, he said, I want to play football. We kind of surprised him. He's like, okay, then let's
go. I'm sure he was.
Let go. Do you want to tell him about the next part? Of how I told you guys at the...
I want to save that. I want to leave that as a cliffhanger, actually.
Okay.
Because I want to dive into more of this later on.
Oh, definitely.
Okay. No way. My mind is just blown right now.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Social difficulties. Actually, we already kind of dove in on that one.
Yeah, definitely.
Is there anything else you wanted to say on that, though?
Social.
So for, I guess... Okay, actually, you know what? We'll dive in all these, and then I want to just get like a simple no.
We'll do a little... Yeah.
Recap.
Overview.
Yep. Okay. So social difficulties.
Yeah.
Anything else you wanted to say on that?
I don't know if you might say this later on. Social etiquette. Social etiquette, I would say. Like, for a long time, I did not like combing my hair. I just did not like having the Brussels. Vince knows this. I did not like combing my hair. Did not like putting on deodorant.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny because this is some of the things I have to teach the next generation of the kids I'm mentoring. He's like, you got to do this stuff. And I was like, oh, gosh, this is my punishment for not doing it.
They're like, why do you have to do this? And you're like, hey, trust me, I also didn't know this.
Yeah, exactly. But you got to be socially present. Like, you have to make your clothes match. Stop mismatching your socks.
Right.
Stop having holes in your socks.
Yeah. Okay. Linguistic oddities. So, this is, I believe this is what is the stating. So, I'm just quickly browsing this paragraph below. And it's saying that often they speak at a lower capacity. So, or like at a later, tone? at a much later part in their life as well. I don't know if you remember the days. We probably need mom and dad to.
I would almost have to. I didn't really speak a lot earlier on in my life. Mom told me that. I think it was like maybe 3 or 4. We would probably have to check with her. But even then, like even speaking up, that was a difficult thing because I did not like hearing, like my voice is kind of booming, but I did not like the way it fully sounds. So I kind of murmured a lot. So just developing that confidence to speak, I would have to say, definitely.
Sure. I even seen a line in here where it says they may find conversations to others boring or difficult to follow and may avoid speaking with their peers. So it even mentions to where they might like interrupt someone because they want to talk about something else.
Yes.
Do you feel like you do this?
I did that when I was younger.
Oh, okay.
When I was younger.
Start on another path.
Yeah, I would interrupt mom and dad when they were talking to other people.
Be like, hey, why did Luke Skywalker do that?
Yeah, or just like some random stuff. It's like, hey, mom, can I do this? Hey, mom, can I do that?
Okay.
Because I didn't understand the social, like they're engaged in social exchange, and I didn't understand that there was a proper way of.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So okay. Definitely.
That's fair. All right. Problems processing physical sensations. It's kind of, do you want some context?
Yeah, that definitely needs context right there.
All right. Yeah. So many individuals with autism have sensory difficulties. They may find specific noises, tastes, smells, or feelings intolerable. Noisy public places can lead to emotional distress and can uncomfortable clothing or unwanted touches. Okay. Just going into the distress.
Okay, so I think I know what that means.
Okay.
So there's a thing in the ADS community called sensory
ASD.
ASD.
Yep.
Such as sensory overload. Like there are things that we will get overwhelmed pretty easy, like certain noises, like say a fire alarm, a loud stadium, a crowd full of people in an enclosed area. Dogs, or like I almost have a lot of things that I'm actually pretty sensitive to, but like, you know, like the loud noises, I do not like being in, like I had to get over, like, my brother and sister, they both played in, indoor sports. So that was one of the most difficult things I had to, get used to because of, I could get sensory overload, and sensory overload is like essentially it's just a piercing headache, or just like you were just, you feel your body just feels so uncomfortable.
Sure.
Yeah. And there's just certain things like there was this old laundromat we had in Powell, and I could not go in that room. It's just the smell, it just, irritated.
Oh, so it's not just noise.
Oh yeah, like there are things that certain things I do not like feeling in my hands.
Okay.
Trying to think, what was a, there's this it's a certain wood, I can't really, it's dry wood.
Okay.
It's like super dry wood. I do not like that feeling because it's so sharp to my hands, so I can't really feel. I do not like carrying like logs and whatnot, but I still do it just because.
Because you're the strongest man in the group, usually.
Well, yeah, usually. And it's just, so getting over that is definitely like, and I'm also a churchgoer. Mm-hmm. Even when we were younger, it's like, why isn't Mitch talking to people? I usually be the, after the church service was over, and our congregation, we like to gather in a small room, I was always out at the door.
Right.
I just did not like being trapped in there because it would always give me a headache and it just overwhelmed me.
Sure. So it's sensory overload. So of the, how many senses do we have?
Five.
Okay, five senses.
Can you name them?
So yeah, so we have five senses. Okay, so it's more of
like taste, touch, smell, sight, and hearing.
Nice.
Yeah,
Mitch, that was, did you study before this?
No. Well, it's
common sense, probably.
Yeah. All right. You're gonna cut this out.
Yeah, probably. Okay, so it's more of, it's not in the, I guess it's in the interpretation of those sensories, or those
it's
sensors.
Almost like hypersensitivity to those.
Sure.
Like sure. Our senses are just like.
Because I was reading a lot of these and I'm like, you know, there's a bunch of smells that I can't really handle and I don't like those, but I think it might be more with my interpretation of them, or mm-hmm. maybe when I get into a room with a bunch of noise pollution mm-hmm. at high levels of volume, is I can understand those and comprehend them, but they do not overload me in any sense to where I might feel uncomfortable.
Oh yeah, like
so you're just saying that you hit that uncomfortability zone just extremely quick.
Yeah, and you can tell in my body language that I am not comfortable. Like I'll lock my hands, like that way I know I'm like I'll be squeezing my arm, like I'm showing Vince yep. right now, so it's
yep, squeezing your wrist.
Okay. Yeah, so that's one clue, just keeping myself like almost tight.
Yeah, sure.
Like super tense.
Okay.
But that's one of the things, just trying to get, it does get better over the years, I would have to say. There are certain things that can bother me, but it doesn't bother, like the age group we're talking about now, like young kids and young teens, definitely will probably experience this, and parents are probably thinking, oh no, what are we going to do? I almost like, like that movie The Accountant, like you hear the dad says he needs more of it, not less of it, because like it or not, as you grow up, you are going to experience more of it. So you definitely adapt it more.
Okay. That's another, that's a totally another one is, which I'd be really interested to know is, what is the best thing for you to do when those situations arise? And, you know, maybe what's the best thing, you know, someone can do for you, or like you can do for yourself? Or is it like you just said, like, you know that you're going to have to face these situations or these occurrences sometime. So maybe it's okay to do those. I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
Okay, what I usually do, I actually have a couple.
Sure.
One, like, if you got something in your pocket, you can just keep your hands busy. Like I say, if your hands are busy, then you're not really thinking about it. So it kind of alleviates the stress in that. But if you find yourself in an uncomfortable situation, you politely ask, may I please leave the situation? Like, may I please leave? Just remove yourself from the situation and try and calm yourself down. There have been a couple times in my life. Mom, she's actually been pretty good about...
She's very aware.
Yeah, she's very aware. So she'll know. It's like, Mitchell, you doing okay? And it's like, yeah, I'm doing fine. Or it's like saying, I need to leave for a little bit.
Yeah.
But I always come back.
You're still here, baby.
Yeah. No, like also in the situation, I don't want you to think, oh, he's gone. He's gone. But I try and... just collect myself.
Yeah. Sure. No, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, but okay. Definitely, yeah.
Okay. This next one is devotion to routines. So someone on the spectrum, they're typically devoted to routines. They may do things like they always go to bed exactly 15 minutes before bed, or they brush their teeth exactly the same time. What about routines kind of?
Oh, yeah. You know my life. I've always had a routine.
Yeah.
Most of the time, you always got to take medicine in the morning.
So walk me through your routine. What does it look like?
Okay, so I normally wake up around, well, since I work until midnight, normally 8 or 9. So if you people who wake up early in the morning, I'm looking at one right now. Definitely feel jealous that I sleep in a little bit more. But I wake up. I don't normally eat breakfast. My stomach just, I just don't have the stomach for it.
Okay.
But I normally go in my bathroom, take my medicines. Normally it's my Paxil, my Medidate, and, well, actually I don't take my Medidate yet. I take my Paxil and then I take my allergy medicine, and then I wait around the house.
Okay.
I have a night job, so please don't judge me. I work at night, so I normally I'll watch some TV, play some games, and
I think this might be what this might be speaking to is it's more of when you can't be in your routine.
Okay.
That's when you really notice it and you're like, okay.
Oh yeah, so let me give an example of when the routine is paramount, like is key, like when you're working is like, I got a routine set, like, which hall I got to clean, what room.
You're a custodian.
Yeah, I'm a custodian at a middle school.
Okay.
And so I have to be there in a certain building, how long I get to spend in that hall, what chemicals I have to use. So that routine is paramount. Like, people in regular fields like saying, oh, that's just a regular work week. And I was like, no, it's like, I have to follow this. And if somebody says, hey, Mitch, can you do a certain thing for me? And that throws me off my routine. Mm-hmm. Some people might panic when they do that.
Oh, and okay.
I used to do that. Like, there are moments where I would get visibly frustrated. It's like, okay. Like, I would still do it, but I would be visibly frustrated by it because it's taking my time that I'm supposed to be filling with my schedule, but it's...
Sure, you have a harder time of maybe like moving laterally in your schedule.
Uh-huh.
So what you would rather do is, you know, finish what you're doing and then possibly go do something else.
Yes, exactly.
So there's like a recalibration period if someone were to throw you off of that.
Yeah.
So what? Okay, got it.
So it's just adapting. That's one thing that autistic people will understand.
So how do you do it? So say your boss comes over to you and says, hey, you need to do this other thing. if, you know, you'll first feel that initial surge of emotions being like, no, you know, I have a routine, I have a thing I have to do. Mm-hmm. Well, you then go into the mindset of, you know, communicate to them that okay, I will do that after I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. So you have to step out of, but you know, be beyond yourself for a second. Let them know that, yes, you will do it, but, you know, when you're able to do it or when it makes the most sense, or I don't know, just tell me.
Okay, so here's the thing. I'm pretty low on the totem pole, so I got to do it. I got to do it and just...
So it's more of a coping with, you know what, I just got to do this and I'm going to deal with it.
Yeah, I got to do that first and then I can go back to my routine. I almost like to think of it as like, it's like a sandwich, like a bad sandwich, like...
I can't wait to see where this
okay,
goes.
Okay, so let's just pretend that somebody put like... say some like bad cabbage in it, okay. Bad lettuce, but you still got the meat in it. So think of it like you want to have the bad stuff first before you go to the good stuff, right?
Okay.
So instead of like, so think of it like as your work is like, let's get all the stuff that I don't like to do, get that out of the way, then get the fun stuff like your routine. And that's your reward. So
sure. Okay.
So do it to the best of you. Like, I'm not saying don't do the bad stuff to like mediocre ability. Still do it to the best of your ability because you got to have those standards.
Yeah. Understanding that you need to be able to do things off the cuff.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably critical for you as well.
Oh,
is
yeah.
Understanding that, you know, routines are great and it's awesome when you get to stick to those, but sometimes you just can't.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But it's just, and that's the thing about life. It's just, you got to get, you have to understand life throws you curveballs and you can't keep dodging them. You got to take the hit.
Sure. Cool. This next one goes right into that. So
which one are we on right now?
All right. I mean, they don't have numbers next to it.
Oh, come on. They said 10.
You're right. We're on 6.
Okay, 6.
So it's development of repetitive or restrictive habits. So repetitive habits are another sign of high functioning autism. These habits could interfere with a person's ability to do what they need to do or others want them to do. One type of repetitive habit might be related to movement. The individual might have to tie and untie their shoes multiple times before they are satisfied and are able to start walking or leave the house. Is that something that you do?
Earlier on, you always know that if I'm feeling nervous, I got to have something in my mouth. And our sister, she's so bad. Like, not bad. Like, she'll always catch us. It's like, what's in your mouth?
Right. It also gives another example of, you know, so for example, an individual might refuse to wear any other kind of a shirt other than their t-shirt. Was that the case for you or no?
Because
I feel like you're like the easiest maintenance or the lowest maintenance person I've ever met.
Probably so.
Dory, you're just go with the flow when it comes to that.
Like, I like to wear jeans, but like earlier on, I would say I always had to wear jeans because I felt more safe that my legs were protected. But right now we're both wearing shorts. I just didn't like the exposed skin, but just over time you understand, hey, certain situations. Like, we're in the summer right now, so
okay,
we definitely feel more comfortable. But I have to say that didn't really bother me, like, clothing-wise, like, more so than you, but...
Was that just a little jab at me?
It wasn't meant to
say... That was a little jab.
Okay, it is a jab. You know you have particulars.
I like good feeling material.
Not jeans, though.
Not jeans. All right, this next one is dislike of change, so that... ties into the devotion to routines.
Yeah, definitely. Or just in general, it's just, I did not like
Is there a change that comes to your mind that is just...
Growing up? No, literally meant growing up. Just like...
Okay,
like you left college and you're like thinking, oh, I can do this.
Oh, it just has each new life kind of. So, middle school to high school to college to being an adult.
Yeah, and it's like saying, Mitch, you can't have that mentality. That was one thing that I remember keep hearing, and it was difficult. It's like saying, okay, I got to pay bills now, I got to pay taxes, got to just do a lot of adult stuff, and as much as I want to goof off and play video games the rest, most of the day, I got to work, I got to do... responsibility, and that was one of the hardest things to do. But I think it took me, maybe it was 21. Yeah, probably 21, till I fully realized you had to grow up. Granted, it's a little late, but...
So I want to point out the extent maybe that this might, this dislike may range from. Okay. So one example that gives out in this article, and this is, I didn't even cite the source. So this is appliedbehavioralanalysisprograms.com. Could be totally credible, totally not. This is about his story, his perception. So it says, if someone used their preferred dish, they may not want to use a different one from that point on. So I don't think that you're of that extent.
I'm not that extent.
But maybe kind of like behavioral.
I got to have at least, let's say this, I got to have at least pizza once a week. I know it's weird, but it's got to be something. It's just, it's a good food to have, or at least, or Chinese at least once a week.
Okay, so it's not as finite as it might be, you know,
no.
The orientation of where your toothbrush is or where your dishes are or which dish you use.
Yeah.
But maybe for larger behavioral things, maybe from like week to week, maybe if it is something like that, maybe like a diet or a specific type of food.
Okay.
That's reoccurring.
I thought of something. At work, I always empty my pockets. I cannot have stuff in my pockets at all because I do not like this because I'm moving around a lot.
Are you saying that from a place of change because sometimes you did, one time you did have to carry something in your pocket?
Oh, yeah. There was this one time I was carrying pencils in my pocket. Okay. And it was just stabbing me. And then when I lifted up, my leg was just completely bruised, like little pocket marks.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so, and then it was just like, okay, and then after that, I just didn't like the sensation of, like, say, my wallet being pressed against my leg.
Okay, I can identify with that as well, then.
Yeah.
Okay. It's even saying, you know, if you go to the grocery store and a usual brand of peanut butter is out, you may not like that, but see, are you like that at all, either?
Or if there are certain brands that I will avoid just because of bad experience, but other than that, I don't see...
Doesn't need to be the exact same brand every time.
Exactly. Like, okay. I don't look at rice and say, okay, it's got to be Uncle Ben's rice.
Yeah.
or something like that. It's just rice.
Yeah.
It's as long as it comes in a big box.
Okay. So it might actually be, it might be less of the, of change as a...
But this is for me, not just for everybody
yeah,
in general.
So, yeah,
like so the spectrum, so...
Yep. So... You might not care so much on the change of
peanut butter.
As peanut butter, but you do care more when it actually goes into your routine, which a routine could be when you work, you don't want anything in your pocket.
Yeah.
So it's more when it goes into a systematic pattern of something like your routine.
Yeah, like just saying, like my eating habits don't really change, probably more my work.
Okay.
So like certain aspects of your life, I'd say.
Cool. All right, number 9. Is focus on self. So people with high functioning autism may have trouble developing deep social relationships with others. So they tend to focus on themselves, and I'm just glancing this article. So they might pour a drink for themselves without even asking, or they'll only talk about themselves when you're laughing. So why?
Okay, sorry. I just can't imagine like me going to my boss's office and just pouring like a shot of whiskey. It's like, mate, you work in a school. What are you doing?
Sure.
But I think that's almost like what we were talking about, like the social presentation, like social,
kind of like the transactional, like, you know, social to social person or social interaction is where, you know, yeah. I give you something, some information, and then you ask for it back or I ask you back. Right.
Uh-huh.
Is that kind of what you're saying?
Almost like that. But also like there are certain like, one of my bosses, I don't know if we'll just call him Kyle.
Okay.
And
isn't that your actual boss's name?
Yeah, I'm not saying his last name though.
Okay.
So cut this out. Okay. Cut this little section. We'll call him Kyle.
We know Kyle. He's great.
Yeah. So he's one of my bosses. He's my friend, but he's also my boss.
Yeah.
So you have to distinguish the two.
Oh, take into consideration the dynamic.
Yeah, exactly. It's like saying Kyle isn't asking me as a friend at this. as a friend in this, he's asking me as his boss. So you have to understand the dynamics of that.
Right. I think you're a pretty selfless guy, though. Perhaps the most I've ever known.
I would say in younger, I was selfish. Like when I played video games, I thought more of myself than you. But then after mom and dad, they had to sit down with me one time. It's like saying, well, Vince and Tori, they want to see you at their games more because I did not like going to your games.
Yeah.
And I think that really struck a chord with me because the more I thought about it, I was hurting you guys. And that's something. I mean, I know I don't want you to think I regret it. I kind of do regret it that I didn't spend as much time with you as I did. I wish I did spend that time, but
you were able to kind of redirect your thinking of, you know, what I'm doing is, you know, something I enjoy to considering the impact and maybe value you could be giving someone you love.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, if you repackage it in that sense.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to do that for that person and not focus on myself.
Yeah, that was one thing that's one thing, like, you and I always had a pretty good relationship because we were we lived in the same room for about 10 years.
Yeah.
So, and then I always felt sorry for Tori. It's just like, she was, like, you and Tori, you were closer in age, so you had a pretty good relationship, but she was the youngest and I was the oldest. We didn't spend a lot of time. I would say almost, like, later on in the years, like when she was in high school, that's when I was really starting to spend time with her because it just...
And you would ask her, I remember this, you would ask her questions, yeah. You would, you know, look into her topics and really engage her with something that she enjoyed.
Yeah, that was one of the things I wanted to make sure that I know that I loved her. And that was one thing
that was really cool. So you wanted to make sure that she knew you loved her.
Exactly.
So... You were really doing these things because you wanted to show us.
Exactly.
Show us that you loved us.
And that's what I think I try and do. Like, I may not say it all the time, but I always want to show it. And if you don't understand that, I've realized that this was something that our dad's dad had a difficult time with telling his kids that he loved him.
Sure.
Loved him, but he's... his actions. So
and these are the things that you would think about.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like saying, I want to be more letting Vince and Tori know that I love them and let mom and dad know that I love them. And that's one thing I always tell the kids I'm mentoring. It's like, make sure you tell your parents that you love them because they need to hear that.
As well as you can part with maybe your own, your own selfish acts to show them.
It's like saying, hey, you mean a lot to me right now.
That's really cool, Mitch.
Yeah, thank you. Well, you mean a lot to me.
You mean a lot to me, too.
Thank you.
I'm definitely cutting that out.
Okay.
Okay, and this last one. I think it's funny, this last one. This will help us wrap up. So it says, unusual movement patterns. What do you think that means?
Movement patterns?
Yes.
What is, like...
So it says, toe walking is a common movement disorder.
Oh, well... Or I had flat feet, so I walked duck. Like, I could walk duck.
And well, the physics just aren't on your side if you were to walk on your toes, because you have size 18 shoes.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So,
well, that and they're flat, too. So, like,
yeah,
like you would see me sometimes, like, have my foot like this, and my dad says, you got to walk straight.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because you walk with your feet pointed outward. I forgot what that's called.
I don't know. But I had flat feet, too, so
yeah,
it was kind of hard. I have no arches. I have, yeah, no arches at all in my feet, so.
I thought this was hilarious when I was reading through this the first time around is, I mean, you just have such a specific walk, and anyone who knows you is listening to this right now, they know the Mitch walk. I can't even explain it, but it is a certain, there's a walk to it. So, okay, let's do a recap here.
Okay.
All right, so we got... Emotional. So, actually, I guess what's the goal here? So, the goal is to
try and understand the difference between high and low functioning. So, what we were doing about this one is just how it relates to me as a high functioning individual. Low functioning. So, their social skills are pretty a lot lower than this, but they might test high in certain categories of this list too. Okay, so I'll give you a yes or no.
Okay, yes, and then maybe to what degree?
Okay.
So you can just use an adjective like yeah, like yes, totally.
High yes or low.
Or you can just say yeah, totally, or yes, or no, or okay, things like that. Okay, so 10 symptoms of high functioning autism. First one is emotional sensitivity. So this is where, you know, you might feel a certain emotion and it's harder to contain that, or maybe the extent in which you feel it.
I'd say that's a medium.
Yeah.
Like, it used to be high, but it's a medium now.
Oh, yeah. Please, please do give the timeline associated with those.
Okay.
So fixation on particular subjects or ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Like a 10.
Okay, let's do a 10. It's getting better.
I mean,
COVID has kind of killed it down right, a little bit.
That's
so.
Right. Linguistic oddities. That is the irregularities with your speaking. Mitch isn't laughing because I could just cut out myself stuttering.
Yes. I'd say, can you...
Yeah, so this was when they, you know, they speak later on in their life.
I would say earlier on. I'd say it was high when it was earlier on, but I've kind of gotten more comfortable with the social aspect of that. So I give it a low.
Okay. Social difficulties. Timeline's really important on this one.
So is this like social situations or?
Kind of like just building any kind of relationship.
Okay,
with,
elementary through high school, I would say it was definitely high. Like, I had such difficulty just trying to relate. I was almost like senior year, if that's a timeline, like late junior, early senior year, that's when I peaked. Like, I felt it started to go. Difficulty was low.
Sure.
And I have to say it's about a medium now.
Okay. Problems processing physical sensations. So this is the sensory overload.
Okay, so in certain those situations, I say they're medium now, but earlier on they were high, like super high. That was like you can get me in a room full of people and make me stay for more than like 10 minutes.
Right.
I had to leave, so.
Devotion to routines.
High.
Yep, super high. Development of repetitive or restrictive habits. So this is kind of, this is, for example, they might refuse to wear a certain type
low.
Of shirt. Okay. Yeah.
That's low.
Very low maintenance person. Dislike of change.
Medium.
Okay. Focus on self.
I almost have to.
I think it might be more my place to say this.
Yeah. Can you say
it's,
it?
I'll
do it. Because I don't, it I makes mean, me sound egotistical.
Yeah. anyone who knows you, it's maybe as low as it can be, but I only get to see the end result. There might be a whole lot that goes on inside of your cognition that I don't get to see. Okay. So I think that that's worth diving in later on.
Okay.
And then unusual movement patterns. Again, this one's for me. I don't know, medium. I mean, you didn't even know, really, right?
I don't know.
I mean, you understand what the medical diagnosis of, like, you know, no arch in your foot or having really large feet. I don't know. Mitch kind of walks funny.
Okay.
Just kind of.
I'm a tall man.
All right. That's episode 2. Hope you guys enjoyed it.
Thank you for your feedback. Any more that you do provide, we gladly would appreciate it. And if any topic you want to talk about, please leave a recommendation at our podcasts at Apple, Spotify.
Yeah.
Apple, Spotify.
I don't know where else we are. I'll be
honest
with you.
Apple and Apple and Spotify. We'll definitely be keeping an eye on those comments. But we certainly definitely appreciate you during this time. I know it's a very difficult time with the COVID, but we will get through this together. We are strong. We always adapt and together, and we are always stronger together. And so thank you so much for spending this time. This is Mitch Sleep.
And Vince Sleep.
And thank you for listening to the Autism Podcast.
See you guys.
See ya.